On today's show, do you ever feel like you're just way too busy to actually spend time growing your business? If so, you're not alone. We chatted with Will Gibbons, whose work is really cool. He works with clients like Peloton, 3M, and Vizio. But Will's got a problem, a great problem. He's got too much work, which means he's busy. And he's worried he doesn't have time to actually grow his business. Clay and I help him punch through those barriers in this episode of Freelance to Founder. Here we go.
I'm Preston.
And I'm Clay, and this is Freelance to Founder.
Clay and I have both been there, barely making ends meet as a freelancer, knowing there has to be more.
But since then, we've each built multiple six or seven figure businesses.
And now it's your turn. On this show, we're changing the lives of everyday freelancers just like you.
Discovering this podcast a few months ago really like changed the trajectory of my journey.
I'm not sure I would even be thinking about pushing this forward as much as I am if it weren't for YouTube.
This has been really helpful and I think a good mindset shift for me.
Really, really valuable stuff. I've made a ton of notes and I plan to put this stuff into action immediately.
Discovering that I'm a founder instead of a freelancer has been amazing for me.
If you're ready to push past hourly rates and build a business that sets you free, then you've got to join us.
You can call in yourself by visiting freelance2founder.com. We can't wait to chat with you.
We'll be back with today's caller after this.
Whether you want to travel more or communicate better with international clients, you need to try Babbel. I've used Babbel's courses and you can do the same in order to learn real life conversation skills in a different language, order food, ask for directions, or speak to clients without having to use translation apps. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription. This is only for our listeners at babbel.com/freelance. That's 60% off at babbel.com/freelance, spelled babbel.com/freelance. Rules and restrictions apply.
When you wake up in the morning and check your phone, does it feel like this or like this? Because with Shopify, your morning can feel like this way more often. That's the sound of a sale being made on your new Shopify store. And while client payments may require weeks or months of work, you can start generating a semi-passive income to grow your business by setting up a Shopify store all of your own. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your latest designs on shirts or bags or adding something totally different to your business, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. You can sell online, you can sell in person, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. With Shopify, you can set up your store in minutes and start selling immediately. And Shopify's award-winning support is there to help you as you go. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/freelance. That's all lowercase. That's shopify.com/freelance to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/freelance, or click the link in our show description and start waking up to this. Okay, we are excited to be back on the air today here with our friend Will Gibbons. Thanks for joining us, Will.
Yeah, thanks for allowing me to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, joining us on the air today is Clay Mosley from Dripify, getdripify.com. Hey, Clay, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. I'm pumped to chat with you guys today because right before we pushed record, Will actually said, when I signed up a month ago for this coaching call, some things have changed and now I want to talk about scaling because I'm just getting I'm reading between the lines that basically he's getting a lot of inbound leads. So that's a great problem to have. And I think it'll make for a great conversation today. Will, let's back up though, just a little bit and start off the episode by telling Clay and I and the listeners a little bit about your current business.
Yeah, no problem. So pardon me, I'm the owner of Will Gibbons Design and I'm an industrial designer who's become more of a rendering expert over the years. And I create visuals for businesses that design and sell like physical products. Everything I create is CGI or done in the computer. And so I normally begin with like a 3D model of a product. And then I use a render engine, which is like a virtual studio in the computer to create cameras, lighting, materials, animations. And then I render those out to either an image or an animation for post-processing. And then the result that I get from that is like a photo reel image often used for, say, e-commerce or social media marketing or packaging or product launches. And so the benefit of going with CGI is that I'm not bound by limitations that most photographers and videographers would face. So I can create images before the physical product is actually manufactured. And it's often cheaper and more flexible than photography, especially with larger and more expensive products. So that's kind of what I do. And I've been doing that on my own for, I guess this month marks 1 year. So not...
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so I haven't been at this full time for terribly long.
Yeah. My mind was actually blown a little while ago when I realized I was watching car commercials and the cars were completely CGI. Like down on the bottom, it said something about them being CGI. And I was like, whoa, hold on a minute. Car commercials don't actually have the cars in them anymore.
I feel like everything's like everything we see on a screen is CGI these days, right?
Yeah, no, there's a good chance of it. It's technology and the software and hardware has come a long way lately, for sure.
So yeah, share with us maybe a recent a project that you've really enjoyed or an example of something that you've done so that we can get a clearer grasp of the kind of work that you do.
Yeah, so a lot of what I work on is protected by NDAs, of course, given that upcoming products or you know, for whatever reason. But most often who I'm working with is kind of mid to large businesses who have consumer electronics. Personally, just out of my own interest, I try to work with companies who create products that I think do good for the world. So I like to work with companies who enable artists and other creatives. So whether it's musical gear, audio gear, technology that allows people to consume media, TVs and stuff like that. That's been a bulk majority of it, but it's not limited to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, cool. So a company calls you up and they have, I don't know, a new electronic something. Like, do you have a completed project you could tell us about?
Yeah. So right now, let's see, the last, probably the most visible or most familiar project is Peloton. They do those fitness bikes as well as treadmill.
Yeah.
Some people call them coat racks. Depends on how long you've had them.
That's right? An expensive coat rack.
That's what I've heard people say.
Oh man, yeah. No, they.
We can cut that out of the show, Will. Sorry,
it's no
probably
worries.
An important client for you. Yeah. Anyway, yes, we've heard of Peloton, big company.
Yeah, absolutely. So they like that's a perfect example or case study, just because that's a really large product and they didn't have the final units yet when CES rolled around, but they needed all of their marketing imagery to unveil it. So that was a good example of where, you know, I could work with their team, their talent, the models that would be on there, but then also use the CGI element to deliver what they needed when they needed it.
That's legit,
that's really
man.
Cool.
That's a big deal.
Thanks. And then, yeah, there's I talk about it, but it's, you know, the next product that I just finished up is launching in like 2 days. So just kind of have to be patient there. But
all right. Well, maybe by the time we actually publish this episode, we can throw it in the show notes. We'll leave that little teaser for the listeners. You can go ahead and click it down in the show notes and we'll link to the project if we can there. Will, does that sound okay?
Awesome. That's great. I love it.
Okay, cool. So you used to work at a company that trained people to use the software you use. Is that right? Did I understand that right?
Yeah. So I've got kind of a winding journey, but the short version of it is one of the software that I used as an industrial designer to actually design products does this rendering, which is all I focus on now. So I became familiar with that through my school when I went to school for product design. But then later I was hired by the company that makes that software simply because I was creating free YouTube tutorials and they thought I taught it better than than the resources they had available. So they hired me to do that on-site training in a formal capacity. And that way I would be sent to their customers around the world and work with design teams. So I did that for 3 years and that's how I became so fluent with the software. And then I eventually parted ways just so I could be open to opportunities to work with these companies instead of just teaching them how to use it.
It's incredible. I love it. And now you've been doing that for a year. It sounds like you have some really great clients already. And my guess is when you have clients of that caliber, then they also send you other clients of similar caliber. So it sounds like things are chugging along well.
Yeah, really there's a couple things. I was fortunate enough to build a bit of a reputation, for better or for worse, doing the training that I was doing, being the voice behind a lot of tutorials and videos. And so Even though I left the company that I was at, a lot of the people knew where to find me after the fact. So, yeah.
It's always nice. And a classic tale of a freelancer doing great work at a company and then deciding to go out on their own, but not burning those bridges so you can actually leverage those relationships later on in your own business.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I actually later next week am doing a webinar for the company, my previous employer, because again, we are on great terms. We work together. It's really within no one's interest to try to cut ties at that point, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what I love about this is so many freelancers wonder whether they should, after school, whether they should just start freelancing on their own or whether they should go work somewhere for a while. You know, I'd love, Will, your take. I'd love, Clay, your take. This, for me, though, points out something that I'm always preaching, which is you can build so many impactful relationships, even in just a short amount of time, 3-5 years, which maybe doesn't feel short when you're just getting out of college, but it really is a short amount of time. You can build some amazing relationships that then lead you to not only understanding how the business works and how to work with clients and how to do the actual work day to day, but also you build relationships that can bring you referrals for your business down the road. It can be a very wise way to go instead of just starting from scratch straight out of college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Whenever anyone asks me for my opinion on that, since I am freelancing now, I always tell them the same thing. I say, go get a job somewhere. You'll learn a ton. Just a few years. You know, I totally think that's clutch.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting. I think this is a highly debatable topic. I tend to lean on the other side. I do agree that if your skills are very elementary, I think it's crucial to go and work for someone and learn those skills. I think what to me for me is, and the reason I'm saying this is because when I first started as a freelancer, my design skills, they just sucked, and I will be straight up about that. And the first website I ever built, it's still out there. I'm not ever going to share what it is, but it's still there. And sometimes I look at it and I cringe and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I built this. However, I will say this though, no matter what level skill set you're at, because there's always going to be somebody that's better than you. There's the other side of the coin is there's always going to be somebody that's worse than you and needs your skills to make something happen. And so, you know, at that time, it just reminds me of the fact that that client still needed to hire somebody like me, and the product that I produced was satisfactory to them. And so I think, like, no matter what level you are with your skill set, I think there's still a market out there for it. But going to that question, I think it all depends on whether or not you can sell it. That's my thing.
Yeah, but you're all about, Clay, you're all about like the warm leads, warming up a lead. Like, imagine, you know, you go work somewhere for 3 or 5 years and you build relationships with people at companies like Peloton, and then you leave there and they know that you're amazing at the work that you do because you've been working with them for 3 years. I mean, I don't know if that's how that happened, Will, obviously, but like, you know, I've seen that happen in my own work. I've seen it happen with other freelancers. There's like no better way, or no, maybe not better way. There's perhaps no easier way to all of a sudden build a network of potential clients than by kind of mooching off of an employer for a few years to build that Rolodex. I don't know. Maybe it's not worth the sacrifice.
I don't think there's a wrong decision here, in my opinion. Yeah. I think there's pros and cons to both sides. It's just, I think the question is, do you want to develop relationships on with your brand, but you're going to be struggling, I think, at the beginning for sure. Or do you want to develop relationships on somebody else's dime, you know, while you're, you know, basically getting paid a salary or
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah,
I think there's pros and cons. I don't think there's a right.
Yeah, definitely. Because then you also run the risk of like of, you know, you leave and they stick with the company instead of,
yeah,
instead
always of that
hiring you, right? So there are definitely pros and cons to each side.
Well, and
I think go ahead, Will.
The main thing that both are valid, I think it really personality wise is huge. I know as a designer myself and a lot of my peers, the technical creation of the work that they're employed to do is not the challenge. The challenge is personal relationships, communication, being charismatic, learning how to interact with people, how to sell something, how to have the confidence. And all of that for me was learned on the job, because I was the face of a company and I would go out to work with, you know, companies, whether it was, you know, Tesla, Nissan, I don't know, Apple, whoever, big companies like that, Dell, whatever, that had a lot of clout. So at first I would go there being a bit intimidated, but then I had to remember that I was there because I was an expert at something and they were hiring me. So it didn't matter that people who I was teaching had been in the industry far longer than I had. It's that I had, like you said, some valuable information that they could still learn from. And so by repetition of that, that built the confidence that I could then later go out on my own and use. And the other thing was, like you said, taking advantage of that time. I was just as active on social media for those 3 years that I was employed with that company as I am now. In fact, probably more so. I just kept building and letting people know what I was doing constantly. And that is kind of what helped make that decision to leave a lot easier.
It's a very good point. Yeah. I like that. It's, you know, I think you mentioned a lot of good points, like just having the personality, the, like how much risk are you willing to take, knowing the business side of things. And so I'd like to add on to that. Like, I actually think the perfect answer is to go work for somebody as your quote unquote day job, but at night, maybe you're developing something on the side. And you're generating the revenue. And then as your side gig, you know, generates enough revenue to replace or almost replace your what pay you're getting from your day job. In addition to that, you're also developing skills. I think that's probably the perfect point to leave your day job and go freelance.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. I mean, far too often we see people who want to freelance, they get a job for the interim and then they're just stuck there, or they end up climbing the ladder or the golden handcuffs or whatever analogy you want to use. They just end up stuck. It is a fine balance for sure.
It's a lot of work too, right? You're almost working you're working two jobs. And I think the problem is that from a lot of people that I talk to is just straight up, they're lazy to do the side job, their side gig. And so, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. So many people want the results, but they don't want to put in the effort. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Will, I want to chat a little bit about where you're at currently with your business. Then it sounds like business has been good. You're getting a fair amount of inbound leads. You're obviously working with some brands that are familiar, recognizable, have good budgets. What is it that's maybe keeping you? Well, let me rewind. Our listeners know that when we send a questionnaire to people who want to jump on a call, that we ask where you currently are on the freelancer to founder scale. And you said, Will, that you are currently a one. You're completely a freelancer. You do all the work. You find all the clients. You bill the clients. You run the business and you do the creative work. You do it all. And that you would like to, in the next 6 to 12 months, get to be more like a seven, where you're running a business, you have a few systems in place, maybe you're still doing some of the creative work and working on some of the projects, but you're really starting to manage a business a little bit more. I'd like to take a quick break here for just a couple minutes from our sponsors, and then I want to hear from you, Will, why you gave yourself that rating and how we can help you make that journey from one to seven. So we'll be right back in just a second.
Have you ever noticed that many of the problems people call in with on this show can be solved by hiring someone? Sometimes you need a full-fledged team, other times maybe just a simple assistant, or an expert in something you're not great at. Whatever your reason for hiring, we recommend you take a look at LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. As you may know already, LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. And LinkedIn Jobs makes the process of finding the perfect teammate easy and intuitive. Hiring is always easy when you have access to so many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours when using LinkedIn Jobs. I've used it myself, and it was so simple. In fact, I've made multiple hires using LinkedIn Jobs. And did I mention, by the way, it's free to business owners like me and you. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/freelance. That's linkedin.com/freelance to post your job for free, or click the link in our show description. Terms and conditions apply. You know, working from home is mostly great, but there are some days when I realize I haven't left my house or even my chair like all day. Have you been there? Getting outside to exercise or making a trip to the gym are just harder now that my office is just a flight of stairs away. If you're stuck in the same rut as me, then you should try Hydro. That's H-Y-D-R-O-W. With the Hydro Rower and 20 minutes a day, getting a full body workout is so much easier. Hydro can work up to 86% of your muscles in just 20 minutes for an insane effective home workout. That's because Hydro pairs the effectiveness of rowing with the power of technology to connect you with over 5,000 video trainings, classes, and workouts. And get ready to get out from behind your home desk, because after a few months of daily rowing with Hydro, your partner's going to want to take you out for a night on the town to show you off. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use code freelance to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydrow.com and promo code freelance to save $400. Hydro.com, promo code freelance, or just click the link in our show description.
All right, you're listening to Freelance to Founder. We're back here with Will Gibbons and Clay Mosley. We're talking about Will's business, doing very well so far. And before the break, chatted about his own rating on the Freelancer to Founder scale. He's currently at a 1, wants to be a 7. And Will, I want to hear about why.
Yeah, good question. So as you mentioned, I am definitely a freelancer. And this was a bit intentional. I had a lot of kind of debate, personal debate, when I set my business up, if I wanted to kind of position myself as a studio with a brand that wasn't my name and everything like that. But I realized that I had gotten so far, I'd gotten to where I have been because of my name and my recognition. And if I create a brand, then it feels like starting all over. So I just went ahead and made it clear that I am a company of one, a single person. My own name and my knowledge is what brings the value, as far as my clients are aware. And so that's what pegs me as a freelancer now. And as you pointed out earlier, it takes a lot of time to run the business outside of just the work that I'm billing for, of course.
Right.
Where I want to go eventually is that is higher up the scale. And I think I did throw myself at a 7 as far as a goal. And that would kind of, like you said, I would be involved somewhat creatively, but perhaps a little bit more from a direction standpoint, not quite from a button pressing standpoint. Because I find that I really like the process of generating the ideas and the final like deliverables of the video and everything, or the animations that I do and stuff like that. But there's a lot between that initial discussion and then the final delivery that at times feels tedious. And to your point, if I was more at a higher level running the business, I could work with more clients. At this point, I kind of get working on one project, and then it's like I'm full bore on that one project with that one client. And then I have to pass everything else that comes in my inbox along to friends, which I don't mind doing. But I'm at this weird stage where I feel like I need to be able to say yes to more projects to realize the revenue required to grow. So I'm in this kind of weird stage.
Yeah. And you know, you might call it a weird stage. I would love to hear Clay's thoughts, but it sounds like you're actually in the perfect position. If you already have friends that you're handing off projects to, and if you're saying no to projects, you can, you know, we talked about this in a previous episode about raising your rates. You can just charge more if you're turning down projects, or you could start to build a team, even if it's subcontractors at first. You could start to build a team and processes around handing off projects instead of just handing them off. Instead, you know, you could retain that client relationship subcontracted out to a friend, and then, you know, maybe collect a portion of the profits and maintain that client relationship. I don't know. Clay, what thoughts do you have, man?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. We've talked about in previous episodes about raising the fee because if you are turning down projects right now, like inbound projects, and you're having that consistent problem, then Press and I would both agree that your fee is probably not high enough. Your fee needs to be, before I go into that, where do you think your fee is on a scale of 1 to 10 compared to the industry? Like from 1 being the least expensive, 10 being the most expensive?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would probably say it would be somewhere at, I'd have to guess a 4. And the reason I say that is just because I am not, I'm not a studio with a bunch of people and all the associated overhead. So compared to a studio where they may need to go to get this done, I am very cheap. But compared to other freelancers, I'm on the high end. I've had companies tell me that because I am in that weird stage of like, I have the expertise. I can compete with like, say, a very small studio, but not beyond that. And I also live in LA. So, you know, my hourly rate's a little higher than, say, a freelancer living in the Midwest. So that's kind of where I'd say I'm at.
That brings up a question. Sorry, I want to stop. Do you guys hear that feedback?
No.
No? You guys are good on the audio? Okay. Preston, you okay?
Sorry, I forgot I was on mute. I'm getting it too, but I'm not sure what to do about it at this point. So.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm hoping it doesn't show up in the final in the final audio. You know what I mean?
We'll keep going. It's just coming up every once in a while for me. Not all the time. So hopefully it'll be good. All right. Anyways. So follow up question from that is, why do you think, like, are you pricing yourself at a 4 for because you think because of the fact that you're a freelancer and not a studio, or is there another reason?
Yeah, so I have, my pricing is based on first and foremost making a project, I don't know if I'd say profitable. I've arrived at my pricing based on where I've been able to sell projects, I guess. I haven't had a ton of pushback. I've had a few say, no, you're too expensive, but I'd say not a majority of them.
And when they say you're too expensive, do they say why? Like, you're too expensive for a freelancer, or just too much for our budget?
Yeah. So it's interesting because of what I do is a bit of there's a lot of unknowns out there, and it's not traditional. It's not photography or video. So sometimes people come in with a preconceived notion of what they have for a marketing budget, and they say, okay, we want to digitize our entire catalog. And then there may be sticker shock because they don't realize I have to 3D model everything. I have to create all the labels, the materials, the lighting, the rendering takes time. And then I'm post-producing it in editing programs. So I'm doing the work of like 5 or 6 specialists all at once, which, you know, yeah, studio would charge more for. But I think someone coming into it not knowing that and assuming I'm just a one man doing, you know, one little job, my price might seem a little high, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. So these ones that are coming in kind of ignorant to pricing,
yeah,
with what you do, are they smaller brands, or are they some of the more well-known brands?
No, this would definitely be smaller brands who are in that mid-tier, probably, where they have probably fewer than 20 employees.
Okay. So do you prefer to work with the bigger brands, or do you like working with these smaller brands?
Based on my experience, I've had best interactions and best experiences working with larger brands who have bigger budgets. They seem to be able to identify the value I bring and give me a lot more autonomy.
Okay. So let's just say that the bigger brands are your ideal client, right?
Yep.
So those are the ones, from what you're telling me, are not the ones that are giving you pushback. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yep.
Okay. So I think you have to go back, like, with what you do, and you said you do a little bit of animation, but animation, the industry in general, I think is very similar. There's a lot of people who have no idea what it costs to do an animation video. A lot of the smaller brands think it might cost like $500, but in reality, like, a custom animation video costs thousands of dollars. And so, but the bigger brands, they know this, right? But I think it all comes down to economics 101, supply and demand, right? If your demand is high, but your supply, basically your time, is low, then that means your price point it needs to be higher. So I think you need to be from a 4 to probably like a 6 or 7 at this point, because it's just supplies low, demand's high. And also from a sales perspective, you should be, and this is any business, you should not have a product or service where you have no pushback to your ideal client. There should be a little bit of pushback. And so not so much to where you're getting rejected all the time, but I think you need to have a price point where it's a little bit of an effort to sell it. This is my opinion. Now, I think if you are at that point, and I know this doesn't make sense, like, to the listeners, like, I know a lot of people are saying, well, why would I price it at a point where there's some pushback? Like, and the reason is because even though you might have a little bit of pushback and your conversions might be slightly lower, like, if you just sit there and do the math versus being like priced at a 4 out of 10 versus a 7 out of 10, like, you will make more money. You will. And not only will you make more money, you will attract more of your ideal client that way. Because like these big brands, they know what it costs to do this type of stuff. And so I would be willing to bet these companies that are getting quotes from you, they're doing projects from you. When you tell them whatever your price quote is, I bet they're thinking, wow, that's really inexpensive. And then they just sign on the dotted line and work with you. So I don't know. That's my take on that. So I think increasing your fee is going to be, I think that's your next step.
Yeah, that makes it, that makes total sense. I mean, I think I agree. I mean, I think I realized that fairly recently when I saw, okay, the average time I'm on a project, and I've actually been getting into doing animation almost exclusively now because it's become, people keep asking for it and I keep creating it. And they're the most time consuming. And so if I'm on a project for 6 to 8 weeks, I could conceivably fill my calendar with 6 to 8 week projects. But based on what I'm charging, I would just be hitting my like revenue goals. And I'd obviously like to be able to do that without being booked 24 hours, you know, 365 type. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sounds to me like maybe the problem that you brought up at the beginning of the show, and maybe even before we pushed record, so we'll summarize here, but that problem goes hand in hand with this pricing issue. And from what I understand, it's you want to be able to charge more potentially. You want to be able to scale. And what I'm hearing is you don't necessarily feel like you can charge more because you're not an agency. You know, I heard words from you like, I don't have the kind of overhead or the kind of, mm-hmm. you know, personnel costs associated with my projects. I'm the only one that does them. Like, I heard a lot of that kind of talking. And I think one thing that might help with both of those issues, both the scaling and hiring and the charging more, is understanding that quite often clients don't actually pay you for, you know, your personnel or for the hours that you put in. They just pay you for the final product, and not even really that, they pay you for the value that your final product brings. And so if you can identify how valuable it is for Peloton to have the right animation videos at CES, right, that is hugely valuable. Yeah. If they showed up without their videos, there would be a major problem, right? And so it's not about like, well, it you know, it took me 6 weeks, 40 hours a week times whatever my rate is, and I don't have any offices or overhead. I don't have any employees to pay. So I'm, you know, I'll charge XYZ. Well, in actuality, you should be saying, here's what they've hired me to do, and here's what it means if this doesn't happen for them. And here's what I bet they'd be willing to pay for the value that I'm bringing to their company. So I think maybe those issues can be solved simultaneously, because then as you are able to perceive the value that you're bringing to your client, you're able to charge more. And as you charge more, you're able to hire and subcontract some of those tasks, or start a team, like a full-time team that can help you with those projects as well. And those can kind of, you can kind of stepstone bit by bit and up in price, mm-hmm. up in team, up in price, up in team until you've got an agency running.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And it sounds like, yeah, I've heard that written other places as like fair market value. Like, what does this normally cost in the marketplace? And that's one thing that I don't have experience with, as I've never been employed by a service provider. I've always been, I've taught in the past. I know the software that I use, but I've never been part of an agent. Like, I've never seen how much agencies bill for this type of stuff.
I see.
So I have to,
yeah,
I'm kind of shooting in the dark there. And that's one thing I've wondered quite often. I'm like, how would I find out how much that stuff costs? You know?
Yeah. Clay, do you have any ideas on how he could figure that out? I have a couple, but I'll let you go first.
You know, you could go around and just call around if you wanted to, like competitors, and see what they charge. But honestly, I think the best thing to do is just to test it yourself. Like, I personally don't like, because I bet if you call your competitors, you're going to find that it's completely different from one spectrum, one side of the spectrum to the other. And it's going to be, I think it's going to increase your frustration to do that. I bet Preston has a couple of ideas. I would personally wouldn't do that. I would just say, like, whatever you're charging now, obviously there's not a lot of pushback to the big brands that you're wanting to cater to. So I would just increase your price, you know, a little bit, and see what happens there. I would continuously increasing the price until you get a tiny bit of pushback, where you're not winning 100% of the proposals that you're getting. I think that's kind of the price point, just going from the point that I was talking about before. My opinion, that's the best way to do it. Don't know. You might have a couple of ideas there.
It's so funny, because I was going to say something very, very similar. And that was, if you're dying to know market value, you could potentially say to one of your clients, hey, would you mind sharing? You know, we're looking at growing. That'll help you. We want to service you better. We're trying to figure out our pricing structure. Could you send me the bids that you got from the other companies on this project that we did together? If you have a good relationship with a client, you could potentially do that. But I was actually going to say the exact same thing Clay said, which is that, yeah, that is almost as unimportant to me, at least, as how much it costs you on an hourly basis and some of these other outside factors. Again, for me, it comes back to the value that you're bringing the client. And you don't know what that value truly is until you test it and you go up a little bit. I'm the same way. I've done it the exact same way. You just raise your price until you get a little bit of pushback, raise it a little bit more until you're uncomfortable with how, you know, if people are writing you off entirely, then of course you've gone too high, you need to come back down. The thing is, you can always be negotiated down on a price. You come in with a bid that's too high, they'll try to talk you down. And then you can always accept that lower amount. So
yeah,
I think there's some wiggle room there. I would follow what Clay said and keep increasing until you get too much pushback. And then maybe right around that spot would be ideal.
You know what we could do? I've never done this, but I think it would be really cool to do this. If you have those relationships with your clients, like a good relationship where you can almost like where you can call them up like a buddy. If you could just ask them for feedback and be like, hey, I just want to get some feedback that will help my business. And basically, if you just tell them, hey, you're grandfathered into this, whatever fee I'm charging you. But if you can just give me some feedback on what it is that you were willing to pay as a max, you could try that. I wouldn't ask every single client that. I would only ask those that you're pretty close to and you have a really, really good relationship with. That could be potentially some good feedback there. I think that's a good way. But yeah, I wouldn't go call competitors at all. That's just going to increase frustration. Plus, also, I would also, because you had mentioned too, like you're in LA, so you charge higher fees. Like I would get out of that mindset, because honestly, I think whatever, if you're as good as what you say you are, since you're working with these bigger brands, it sounds like you are. I think you could charge the same price even if you were living in the Midwest.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Yep. I think in the past, the reason that came to mind is like in the past, if someone's reached out and they said like, if they've asked me to do something that, you know, is like really tedious, but not a huge project. And basically I had already turned them down saying like, it's not a fit for my time. And then I think the advice that I gave them was if they're on a tight budget, they could look in somewhere other than New York, LA, Chicago, mm-hmm. San Francisco, you know, places where their freelancers located there. I said, just as a tip, are likely going to be more pricey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say it's not going to be a right fit for your time. Have you, you know what I would do? Preston was spot on as far as like, you know, outsourcing to your friends who also do this same work. You could still take on that client as you, right? But you could outsource it to your friend and you can add a little premium on top for management, like project management, right? So that's kind of an option there. But you know what I would do too is you can almost take a wait list or you can schedule them out. I don't know. Have you ever done that?
Good question. So the one of the challenges with that is the short answer is no, I haven't put anyone on a wait list because I don't want to make assumptions here, but I know in, say, the graphic design world, most people can wait to get a new website. Generally speaking, they can put them on a wait list. In my case, it's almost always tied to a product launch. And then they always come to me like, we need it in 2 weeks. We need it in 6 weeks. We need it in 8 weeks. It's always a hard. So I've gotten in the habit of building a list that I stay in touch with. And I say, hey, things are getting really busy. I'm starting to book out for the fall. Do you guys have any launches coming up? So I'm trying to get ahead of that a little bit. But it's been less than a year. So it's not like I have a lot of time to draw on this. So I'm still building that relationship with that list.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid you were going to say, is that a lot of this stuff is based off product launches. Are those product launches, whenever they say that, is it with the bigger brands or the smaller ones?
Yeah, usually the larger brands. I mean, usually the smaller brands, I think they kind of know they don't have as much leverage and they're like, just as soon as, like, the sooner is the better, you know, that type of thing.
So this, I almost want to say that being a solo freelancer is probably not a feasible model for your industry. Maybe not. If that's what the big brands are doing, if they're just saying, hey, we have a product launch coming up in a couple of weeks. We need this. And if that's a common thing, if that's a common situation that you're running into, you might have to just scale with a team.
Yeah. So I have a tight knit group of friends who do similar work and we're scattered across the world. And thankfully we kind of share work with each other whenever we're too busy. But the latest trend is we're always all too busy. And that's where it's like, that's where I've thought about, well, how do I scale? And one thing there, and I don't know, you guys may not have details on this, but as far as Assembly Bill 5 in California, when I was trying to read up on that, it again, I'm not a law person, but it sure as heck seemed like hiring somebody who did the same thing I do, who provide the same service, would require me to hire them as a full-time employee, which is not something I can afford until I start charging more, as you suggested.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Are you familiar with that, Clay?
No, I didn't know that either. I mean, yeah, it could. I mean, if that's if that's the legal, the law, then that's just what it is.
That was that kind of big thing that was in the headlines a while back because it affected Uber and Lyft drivers so much who are employed on a contract basis. In this case, it's something I can dig into with my, you know, professionals that I rely on to answer those types of questions. But it is something that it seems like at this point it's either full time or not at all. And that's where I've been like,
So I think a couple of things there. One, I would have a lawyer. I would check with a lawyer on that just to confirm it. But let's just assume that that's true. Okay. I think there's a couple of things that you can try because we're talking about time here, right? Like your time is super finite. So I would start thinking about how you spend your time. And Preston and I have talked about this in a couple of episodes, but there's going to be a few things that you can do that's going to free up your time, I think. And I would start thinking about, because you as a solo business owner, you are doing things, I'm sure you're doing things related to your business that is not related to your projects, right? For example, accounting might be one of them, or administrative task might be another, right? Is that's a fair thing to say?
Definitely.
So can you ballpark for me in a percentage how much of your time working is spent doing those small things like that that's not related to a project?
Yeah. So I tracked it. It's tough because I'm not sure if I'm able to give a good answer on that. I know there's a lot of time that goes to it, but what I've tried to do is just basically charge enough on a project that I can just stop tracking my time and not worry about it. But I know for a fact that it does eat into it. It does eat into my time for sure.
Yeah. First of all, you need to track it. You not knowing the answer, I think is a problem. So I think you need to be very clear on what you're spending your time on, because like, I don't know how much you charge. Let's say you charge $300 an hour. Like, you know, I don't know how you charge it or whatever, but let's just break it down by the hour. If you're doing some administrative tasks, that's a very expensive thing to do for $300 an hour, right?
Yep.
Or even accounting, right? You can pay somebody to do your accounting, which you should. Any listener that's listening, if you're not an accountant, I think you should pay an accountant to do that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think you should, step one, figure out where your time is going. Step two, figure out what you can outsource to somebody that will cost you considerably less. And that therefore will free up some of your time. And I bet you'd be surprised how much time you free up by doing that. Because that time that you free up, that could be spent doing projects, and that could equate to, I don't know, 6 to 8 more projects, or 10 to 12, however many that is.
And also it could help you, again, we're not lawyers. We can't offer legal advice to you or anyone listening, but that could help you get around potentially, if that law does work that way, where you can't hire someone who does the same work as you, now you hire an accountant, a bookkeeper, even like a salesperson or a project management person, like depending on how strict that law is, you could deem yourself a project management or a client relationship person. And that person could be an animator or whatever title you wanted to give them. So like, I don't know much about that law, but it sounds like there might be ways to scale around it. You know, Clay and I recommend that you don't hire the same person that you are anyway. A lot of times that just leads to frustration and not being able to do the various tasks that need to happen in a company. I do want to make sure as we round out this call, we've maybe got 10 minutes or so left. I want to make sure that we really answer any questions that you have about the tactical how-to of hiring and scaling? Because I know that was a question that you had before we jumped on this coaching call. What questions, let's turn it back to you, Will. What questions can we answer? We can try to go rapid fire here maybe. What questions can we answer about hiring or about scaling?
I think that really it's actually the large picture stuff that I was interested in, just because you know, I'm really close to what I do, and I really like what you guys mentioned as far as being able to say, well, hey, you got this one skill that is worth a lot on an hourly rate, so just you be that and then hire around you everything else away so you can do more of that. I think that's probably the biggest thing that I think that needs to sink in and that I could probably take action on for sure. Cool. And I know that that's going to be easier to find than what I do, because I do believe I've kept busy because I'm in this weird, I serve a few people with a very specific type of software, and it's not the same stuff that's used in, say, the entertainment industry. So there's a differentiator there. I think, you know, it sounds like too, I may need to talk to, you know, like you said, kind of a lawyer and find out what the next steps are there. As far as scaling and hiring, I guess, let's see.
Or Will, I mean, tell us where you'd like to take the conversation for the remaining 10 minutes or so. Where can we help you most at this point?
Yeah, no worries. I think it may just be a bit of a mind shift. I like where Clay was. It seems like both of you offered good advice as far as project pricing. I think that's the biggest thing I need to get over is the confidence to push that a bit. I do charge per project, not hourly. But on this very last project I just wrapped up, I did track every single hour for the first time because I was curious. So this was, it sounds like I'm kind of figuring out what Clay said, is you really do need to know where your time's going. And with that, I think I came out just to under $100 an hour, whereas my goal is closer to between 150 and three, like you said. So that shows that there's a lot of room there that I either need to cut down what I'm doing in certain areas, hire away, like you said, or the project itself needs to become bigger.
Yeah, I think this is a super tough thing to juggle, because whenever we were talking about like tracking your time, I think it's good to track your time on an hourly basis as far as like what you can outsource to people. But whenever it comes to pricing, Preston would agree with this. You have to get out of that hourly mindset.
Yeah.
And so like whenever you're increasing your pricing, Preston talked about this earlier, it's value, but what you're selling is the transformation, right? You're selling the transformation. It's not what they're getting. It's what that video or that deliverable is going to do for them.
You're selling like the wow moment at CES for Peloton. You're not even selling an animation video, and yeah, you're not responsible for the whole presentation, but it's part of that piece of value. You're selling that they get in all of the major news outlets, and that they get, you know, a huge feature at the show, and that everyone crowds around the booth, and all of this stuff that is way more valuable to them than an actual animation.
Yeah, a good example. You know, do you guys know Beachbody P90X?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. DVDs.
Yes. Yep.
So a good example is they're not selling a eight disc DVD set, right? Unfortunately, this is how people try to sell their services. They say, okay, you get an eight disc DVD set. What they're actually selling, what Beachbody is actually selling, is they're selling an eight disc DVD set that's a transformational guide and video set that will get them a much leaner body getting ready for the summer.
They're selling the Beachbody. And actually, they're selling your friends all going, wow, you look great.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great point. And obviously, so I can sell the same thing. Like, you want envy across your competitors you want lust in the eyes of your audience, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, I brought this up maybe last episode. I can't remember. There's this framework called the Jobs to be Done framework. And it was sort of pioneered by this guy at Harvard in a Harvard Business School. Christensen, I think, is his last name. And it talks all about, like, the real work that you're doing is not actually the job that needs done. So if someone comes into a hardware store, I shared this example last time, they're not there to purchase a drill, even though they are looking to purchase a drill. What they're actually trying to purchase is a hole. What they need is a hole in something, you know, the wall or a piece of wood or something. So they go in to buy a drill, but they really need a hole. And so you have to almost like think down the line. Why? You ask why lots of times is what he recommends, right? And you get down to, okay, why do they need an animation video? Well, because they're going to be at CES. Well, but why do they need the animation video for CES? Well, because all of the major news outlets are going to be there. Well, why does that matter? Oh, because they want to get a feature on, you know, 100 top tech outlets within 24 hours of unveiling their new product. Okay, why? Because they estimate if they can do that, then they can make X dollars in sales. Okay, now we're getting to like a value that you can say, if they're going to make $7 million, then how much is this animation actually worth?
Yep.
Yeah.
You know what a good activity is? A good activity is you say, how much are you making dollar-wise in a monthly basis, right? Let's say hypothetically, you're making $5,000 a month, right? And then the next step is, how much do you want to make? Okay, I want to make $15,000 a month. Okay, the difference there is $10,000 a month, right? So now you can ask yourself, what, by not hiring or outsourcing these tasks, that is costing you $10,000 a month. So I think that's a good exercise to kind of think about.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Focusing almost on the, is that opportunity cost, more or less? I mean,
mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I totally get you there. More being on, yeah. Cause people are afraid of losing what they have, but they should be afraid of not being able to get what they could have, I guess.
I like that. Yeah. Very well said.
Yeah, business owners should be making decisions based off where they want to be, not where they're currently at. If every business owner was making decisions based off where they currently are in their business, they are totally bottlenecking themselves.
Yeah, 100%. Well put. That makes sense.
Very well said. Well, with that, guys, I think we need to round out this episode. Will, I hope that's been helpful. We'd love to check back in maybe in a little while, see how some of this has gone for you and where your business is at. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Killer. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking time to jump on a call with us today. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Freelance to Founder, a collaboration between Millo, Drippify, and the Pogglomerate.
You can find links to my business, Millo, Clay's business, Drippify, and of course our podcasting partner, The Podglomerate, all in the description of this episode.
Remember to call in for your own episode at freelancetofounder.com.
A very special thank you to the members of the Millo and Podglomerate teams who work behind the scenes to make this production possible.
To stream past episodes, visit freelancetofounder.com or search Freelance to Founder wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it for now. Until next time, see ya.
We will see you guys on the next episode of Freelance to Founder.